This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for joining the show. We're going to be talking about what's going on in the news cycle today. This Snowden situation, the guy who used to work for NSA and CIA and now has gone to Hong Kong, and he's revealed some secrets about surveillance in America, surveillance around the world and everything else. The impact of that, and what's going to be the impact on the clearance job community? He was from Booz Allen. And a lot of people are concerned, will that have an impact on the contractors? Or will companies like Booz Allen begin losing contracts because one person has now gone rogue and revealed secrets and everything else? And to talk about this, we've got Evan Lesser on the phone. He is the director, the founder and director of ClearanceJobs.com. He's been around this community for a long time. He deals directly with a lot of the contractors who provide services to the intel community like NSA, CIA, and many others. Evan, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Derek. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you as always. Hey, this Snowden situation, it seems that he is snowed on Washington, D.C. and the intel community for sure. What are you hearing, Evan? Because you deal a lot with the companies who have these contracts and who are hiring for people, who are looking for people with clearances. What's the impact of this Snowden situation?
Well, you know, I think, someone who's outside of this community hears that there are almost 5 million U.S. citizens with security clearance, and they immediately think that any of those 5 million people can sit down at a government computer and just start pulling up all sorts of classified information, not just on national security, but on other U.S. citizens. And really nothing could be further from the truth. The thing to remember about those 5 million people with security clearances is that the information they have access to, 99.9% of them, is only tailored to their job. You know, the government is really good at compartmentalizing information. And, you know, as an example, if you are a physician, you know, working at the VA hospital, you may have a secret clearance, but the amount of information you have access to at the secret level is really quite limited. If you're an Air Force pilot who's delivering cargo across the country, you may have secret information based on what your cargo hold is holding and where you're going and what the flight plan is and who you're delivering it to, but that's about it. You know, look at a janitor who works in the Pentagon or some federal office building or some contractor's office building. They probably have zero access to classified information, but that janitor has a top secret clearance because they need one to get in the facility, and they're probably in close proximity to people that might have access to classified information. So it really is something for the general public to understand, that just because there are 5 million people with clearances doesn't mean that they all have the same access, doesn't mean they all have the same information at their fingertips.
Right.
And really the reality is that a very small number of people have the type of access that Mr. Snowden did.
You know, after 9/11, Evan, and we both know this because we've been talking about this for quite some time, but maybe not, you know, the full public knows this. You know, after 9/11, positions that always weren't cleared, I mean, the security clearance thing became very, very big. And a lot of agencies were like, hey, we need people cleared, this, that, and the other, whether it be a secret clearance all the way to this top secret, SEI, full poly, and everything else. So there was a big kind of blow up, and government grew, and so we had an increase to the number of people who had clearances and work in the government, who were working in the government as well as contractors. Is there still a need for the same amount of people who have clearances, or does that now need to be reconsidered?
You know, it's I guess like any other industry, there's a lot of churn. You know, there's a lot of turnover. There are people retiring. There are people who are young and coming into the you know, defense and homeland security and intelligence industries. And you know, it's a constantly changing a group of folks. So, you know, you've got companies that are winning and bidding contracts, and they do need new employees, and you've got older folks who may be leaving government service and retiring flat out, or maybe leaving and going into the contracting field. So, you know, like any other industry, I think there's movement. I don't think there's necessarily any more movement in defense, homeland security, intelligence than there is in let's say, you know, healthcare or general IT. But, you know, you're correct in saying that, you know, there was a large push post 9/11 for cleared professionals that hasn't really let up necessarily. But at this point in time, especially with the sequester that happened not too terribly long ago, government budgets have, you know, been put on hold. Contracts are not being awarded in the same frequency that they were in the past. Some of the contracts that were awarded are not getting funded as quickly. So there's definitely been a slowdown in what's been going on with this industry, and to some degree that has affected hiring.
You know, with that being the case, are we looking, and I don't know what you're hearing from the contractors, are you hearing some fear from the contractors about this storm? Are you hearing, I know Booz Allen kind of put out there a little a real short announcement about the situation, but are you hearing from contractors a little bit of concern about what will be the blowback from this?
Well, I think considering the kind of depressed atmosphere post-sequester for defense, homeland security, and intelligence, along with the overall economy still being in a recovery phase, yeah, I do think contractors and contracting companies are concerned about business, you know, frankly, based on what's happened with the NSA leaks. But the thing to keep in mind is, you know, there's still an ongoing debate about the usefulness and efficiency of using contractors and contracting companies. You know, the long and short of it is that the government does not have the manpower or the expertise in so many different fields, and that they've relied on contractors since, you know, ages and ages ago. While there was no government at the Revolutionary War, the people that were forming our government relied on contractors to fight alongside of them. Contractors have been in every major conflict on every battlefield and worked alongside government employees for ages and ages. It's also important for most people to remember that contractors, in most cases, are former government employees. So if you say that a contractor is inherently bad, you know, is inherently something that's not good to have in position, you know, you're really talking about the same thing of government employees as well. The really only difference between a government contractor and a government employee is where their paycheck comes from.
Right.
We've got former military generals that are contractors, and it's really hard to say that if one day they were a government employee, the next they were a contractor, that all of a sudden they've lost some manner of credibility or trust.
You know, with you're right, this is a debate that has been a long debate ongoing. And some people will ask, well, you know, why not just keep them as government employees? Why have this big, you know, industrial complex of contractors if the government needs them? I mean, is it a cost-saving measure, Evan? For people who don't understand, you know, what is it, and why do we have so many contractors rather than just hiring them on to the government?
There's a couple reasons. I think the first is hiring a government employee, number one, is a long, laborious, cumbersome process. Talk to anybody who has gone through the federal recruiting process, and they'll tell you that it's long and ugly, and it's something they definitely need to take a look at. But there are a lot of rules in place. There's a lot of red tape, And just to get hired to a federal job can take many, many, many months. That's kind of the first problem. The second one is definitely from the cost savings perspective. We all know that government contractors make more compensation than their, you know, closest government employee counterparts. But the difference is that government benefits, especially for long-term employees, over the course of that employee's life, are super expensive and always have been and are only getting more costly over time. So in the long run, government employees are more expensive than contractors. In the short run, contractors are more expensive than government employees. And I think last but not least is looking at where the talent lies. The government has some true experts on things like policy and budget and finance and things of that nature. But when you get into IT, engineering, cybersecurity, linguists, intelligence, and some other categories, you've got government contracting companies that have specialties in these things, and they really have the best talent that's out there. So if the government is trying to find appropriate people to get the job done, oftentimes the most skilled folks are in private industry, not in government.
You know, Evan, I want to hold that thought, but I've been seeing a trend of some agencies, and you know, of course, bringing in contracts, but I've even seen a trend of some agencies starting to move towards temporary hiring more than bringing on people long term. And I want to kind of get your, you know, and I don't know if this is a trend of government. You know, we've seen term temp hire, but even agencies that I didn't see before bringing in term or temp people for 1 to 5 year contracts. Is there a new movement going on in government with hiring these days? I want to kind of talk about that, continue to talk about the Snowden effect, and then continue to talk about what's going on in the clearance jobs market. We're talking to Evan Lesser. He is director and founder of ClearanceJobs.com. We're talking about what's going on with clearance jobs. How is it being impacted by sequester, the budget, the Snowden situation, and everything else? We'll be right back after this break. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we're having an interesting conversation about the clearance job market. What is the impact of this Snowden situation? The NSA person who's left and gone to Hong Kong and now has revealed some secrets. He was a contractor working at Booz Allen. And some people wonder, is it going to have some kind of impact on the clearance job community? Will some contractors lose business because of this? But also, what's going on in the clearance job market as a whole? Even with budget cuts, sequester, and everything else, will we continue to see a downgrading of defense or the IC, or will we continue to see a bounce back at some point in time? We're talking to Evan Lesser. He is the expert on this. He's director and founder of ClearanceJobs.com. They're a site where you, if you have a clearance, whether it be a top secret all the way down to a secret or confidential, it's a site that you should be on to find out what jobs are out there, to meet with recruiters, to network, and everything else. Evan, I was talking about, you know, I've seen some agencies recently that I never, ever saw term positions or temp positions with, like the CIA, for example. I saw like a 5 year kind of term position, you know, and kind of caught me off guard because usually, you know, those kind of places usually hire for long term. Is this because of the budget situation where government is starting to say, hey, listen, we're not going to bring on people long term? Or is this going to the point of the effectiveness of contractors, that contractors can be around for a number of years, but when we don't need that anymore, we can also cut that down without having them to be civil servants? What are you seeing?
You know, Derek, I'm not sure if this is a trend. I'm not sure if it's something that's going to continue, but it does seem to be potentially something to try out in light of the recent budget issues. Perhaps if there's a job that has a definitive end date, on the books might cost the government less to get that position going. Regardless, you know, as I've kind of mentioned before, the federal hiring process is a really long and laborious process, and it really takes a certain type of person to go through that process and is willing to wait it out. So it will be interesting to see if shorter term type of things working for the government pan out or not, but you're correct in saying that that's traditionally stuff that has gone to contractors.
You know, with this Snowden situation, a lot of people are wondering because, you know, for him to work at NSA and CIA, he had to have some of the top level clearances that are out there. And the majority of, and you can, you know, definitely shine some light on this, the majority of people don't have that level of clearance that he had within the federal government working for those agencies. That's a kind of a select grouping and everything else. But it does lend to ask the question of the security clearance process of, you know, how did a person, and people keep on asking this question, one, how did a person with his lack of credentials get into the you know, these agencies as a contractor? And then two, do we need to take another look at security clearances? I mean, what's your thoughts?
Well, you know, you mentioned before about, you know, the people with access and what they have access to. And Mr. Snowden was very different from most cleared people in terms of access. It is a mistake to believe that all security clearance holders have direct access to all of the classified information at the level they're cleared at. You know, they're really essentially two groups of people. Those people that see and read and work with classified information directly on a daily basis as part of their job, like the military, intelligence analysts, linguists, mission planners, etc. And then people that never see or read any classified documents, but they work in a facility where others are cleared and may have access to classified documents. You think about the things that it takes to keep either a government facility or a contractor facility up and running. You've got HVAC technicians. You've got network people. You've got security guards. You've got budget, finance, and contracts people. And they have very, very, very limited access to direct, you know, classified information. As far as the clearance process goes, you know, the government has made a lot of great efficiencies over the past few years to get the overall time to receive a final clearance down. They're reporting, you know, roughly 4 or so months for 90% of final clearances. You know, talking directly with cleared professionals who have recently got their clearances, a slightly different story. Some people have gotten them in as short as 4 months. Some people it's taking 6 or 8 for higher level clearances. But regardless, compared to a decade ago, lots of efficiencies have been made in terms of the time frame. But what has not been really had a good look taken at is the clearance process itself with regards to the information that we're collecting from individuals. The standard forms, the background investigations, does that information need to be reviewed to make it a little bit more modern, taking into effect modern concerns and potential threats?
You know, with that being the case, are we at a point where, you know, a person, and people will wonder, you know, the psychology of a person like a Snowden or something like that, you know, they go through polygraphs and everything else. And you're kind of touching on, hey, what's the substance? What's the content of the information being collected? Do we need to improve upon that? And, you know, is there discussion? Do we need to improve upon the battery of psychological testing or more polygraphs? I mean, is that kind of stuff, or going back a little bit further into somebody's childhood? Or, I mean, are you hearing any kind of rumblings on that? Is this going to really impact, the revisiting of security clearances?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily call two people a trend, but if you look at Mr. Snowden and Private Bradley Manning, which are really the last two large cases of classified information being released, the trend for at least these two is, one, they're young, they're men, they're technologically savvy, not hackers necessarily, but they know their way around technology well enough. These are people that have grown up with technology due to their age. If you think about older folks like you and I, Derek.
I don't say that, Evan. I'm just playing. Go ahead.
Speak for myself. You think about some of us who grew up with older technology and didn't grow up with the internet. It's a very different mindset versus young people who have literally grown up with the internet from day one.
Right.
They have very different views on privacy. Very different views on information and content that's available on the internet, and if it should be free for all, if it should be public, if it should be private. Obviously, you know that there's a lot of issues with copyrighted materials on the web.
Mm-hmm.
Some younger people just simply believe that if it's found on the web, it is open and free, and they
right.
should have access to it.
Right.
And not saying whether that's right or wrong, but it's definitely a different mindset. If you compare the last two individuals of Snowden and Manning versus maybe some of the more classic cases of
like the Aldridge Ames or something like that.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Ames and Hansen are the two I'm thinking of. You know, it's a very, very different world
right.
now. So,
right.
To answer your question, yeah, I do believe that there needs to be some light shined on the clearance process and look at the standard forms and look at the investigations and try to get a little bit more background on people's views on internet freedom and on privacy and on sharing and what the role of government is in surveillance. And, I think those things are extremely important, and there are no questions or anything that really is in the current process that would lead us to get a read on that.
I think you bring up some really excellent points, Evan. I mean, it is, and I will, admit that I grew up a little bit in that time before the internet age as well. So, some admission on my part. But yeah, I mean, with that, it is a different mindset in terms of a younger crowd growing up where they do, feel as if information should be free and flowing and that we shouldn't have all the secrets that we have. And they're concerned about the surveillance, and they're concerned about, many of the things that we probably did not think about as much as we were growing up. But now is definitely part of the process. And maybe, as you mentioned, the SF-86 or the National Security Questionnaire does not really address any of these kind of questions on it at all. That may mean a new section.
It very well may be, or simply tweaking existing questions to get some different language in, or possibly the OPM providing some new guidance. There is a section that deals with use and misuse of technology systems, but again, I think that what the government may consider misuse of technology, some younger individuals may see it as totally normal. You remember, these are people that have grown up with the internet and grown up with social media as a daily part of their lives. They share, they're open, information is freely traded. They go to the internet as a primary resource for all information versus people in the past that did not, and they definitely have a different mindset. So I do think that it's probably time to take at the clearance process and see if there's anything we can do to tweak the information.
We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're still talking to Evan Lesser. He is director and founder of ClearanceJobs.com, and he's providing some insight on what the impact of the Snowden situation is having on the cleared job market, on the security clearances, and maybe some things that need to change with security clearances. When we come back, we're going to keep on talking about clearance job market. What are some of the trends that we're seeing right now, even with the budget impact? And then also, what's going on with ClearanceJobs.com? Anything new that they've had? They had a recent career fair. It's a unique career fair. I had a chance to attend it. It's a very, very unique concept. We're going to find out how people liked it when we come back. We're talking to Evan Lesser, director and founder of ClearanceJobs.com. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we're having a real interesting conversation about the clearance jobs market. A lot has been going on lately. We just had the recent situation with Snowden, the NSA contractor who went to Hong Kong and started releasing a number of secrets from our intelligence community about certain surveillance that the agencies are doing. This has had some blowback amongst the community, and when people are wondering what's going to happen with the cleared market, the number of contractors out there, security clearances, what is the impact of that? But also, We've had a number of other issues even before that, budget issues that have had impacts on the intel community, DOD, Homeland Security, and everywhere else. So what's the impact on that? We're talking to Evan Lester. He is director and founder of ClearanceJobs.com, and he's going to provide us some continued insight, as he always does. Evan, you know, budget situation, that still has not cleared up. Sequester still hasn't cleared up. We still have a number of different challenges out there. No agency seems to have a clear-cut understanding of how much money they're going to have, what is the way forward in the next few years. What's been the impact that you've seen on this market in terms of hiring?
Well, you know, hiring is still going on. It may be at a slightly depressed rate, but, you know, interestingly enough, and I guess somewhat ironically, is when you take a look at a lot of the dialogue that's going on right now, specifically about how much money the government spends, as well as the information that Mr. Snowden has made public with regards to safety and security and privacy, you know, the common reaction of government when there's a leak is not to get more open, it's actually to get more private. And I think this is somewhat normal for anybody. You know, if you had your own personal data stolen, like an identity type of thief, you know, what would you do? Would you be more open? No, you kind of pull back and secure things down.
You would take everything away, yeah.
Exactly. So I think that what we've seen in the past and what we'll see this time is that for people that are trying to get smaller government and less security and less people with clearances and less privacy, you know, the end result of and less contractors, I should say, the end result of the Snowden leak, I think, is going to be quite the opposite. I think you're going to find government battening down the hatches a bit, trying to make sure that secure information is more secure, potentially changing around the clearance process. You know, when they need new technology to secure systems, obviously they go directly to contractors. So I think we're looking at not just intelligence information being made public by Mr. Snowden, but I think we're looking at a pretty large taxpayer expense in order to kind of shore up the damage and to come through and try to figure out exactly what the government's going to do to make things more secure. So there actually may be new contracts and new proposals and new things out there as a direct result of what's going on with Mr. Snowden. That may also mean changes to the clearance process. It may mean retraining investigators. It may need changes to the standard forms. You know, there's just a lot that's kind of coming about and may come about as a result of this this security risk.
You know, with all of that, you know, a lot of agencies had, in America, in comparison to other countries, as you look at it, we provide, I mean, if you look at our intelligence agencies or national security apparatus, there's a lot of information that comes out, whether it be, you know, you've got agencies like Defense Intelligence Agencies on Facebook or, you know, they're Twittering and everything else. I mean, do you think that there will be just an overall pullback amongst everything? You know, will we start seeing less of a presence of some of these agencies online? I mean, what do you think is going to be the impact of all that kind of stuff?
Well, public presence is definitely different from the managing and securing of confidential information. It makes sense for intelligence agencies to have a public face so people, you know, understand what they're doing and can make up their minds a little bit more informed as to, you know, whether they think that what the intelligence agencies are doing is good or bad. It's always, you know, regardless of what the sector is, it's always bad to hear one side of the story and not hear the other. So I think you'll definitely see more public information coming out with regards to national security information and what processes are happening, and that's definitely a good discussion to have. At the same time, though, when you get into you know, the results of the sequester and the results of budget cuts, it's really creating some security hazards at the same time. The sequester was across the board budget cuts, and just in the past week or so, the Defense Security Service has come out and said that periodic reinvestigations for top secret clearances are going to be put on hold between now and September 30th due to budget cuts. And, that is the kind of thing that, in light of Mr. Snowden's release of information, is just really frightening and very timely, and a real clear understanding about what the sequester has done. I think for anybody who believes the sequester was just a little bit of fluff and didn't really have any real impacts, here's a place where investigations of people with top security clearance to make sure that they should continue to be cleared and should still have access to classified information at the top secret level is going to be delayed until September due to budget cuts.
You know, you mentioned that there's still hiring going on. Where? You know, I mean, for a person who's looking, and we talk about kind of a depressed market, where do we see the hiring going on? Is there any place that there is some robust hiring, or is it going to be a trickle effect from, you know, from now on in a few more years?
There are definitely some parts of the defense, homeland security, intelligence markets that are still hiring lots of positions. Cybersecurity, as you and I have talked about in the past, is still quite important and quite a lot of activity there. But all the bread and butter IT jobs, from database administrators to systems administrators to database architects, systems engineers, you know, all those are still out there and in pretty strong numbers. We see plenty of open positions for intelligence positions, far more now than just a couple of years ago. So those are still
Are those intelligence positions that are more soft set analytical skills, or are those more kind of the hardcore technical? I mean, more of a person who maybe understand imagery, GIS, or are we looking at people who may be coming out of the military who already have clearances or spent time deployed? I mean, what are we seeing? Are they more senior level? What are we seeing?
On the intelligence side of things, with regards to the jobs out there, it's still a pretty wide range. They're mm-hmm. they're looking for signals intelligence, human intelligence, all source. It's across the map. But you've got a lot of private companies that are in the intelligence business and have sections that are pretty specialized. A lot of the positions are still located overseas. And we've seen a pretty big increase in the number of intelligence positions in the Horn of Africa, in Northern Africa, and that area is definitely increasing. But intelligence across the board, many open positions from a wide range of backgrounds and experience levels.
And is that because the intelligence community, and people and always say that the intelligence community, their budget sometimes is a little bit guarded, and sometimes they'll get money before the rest of the government does, or they'll have kind of money set aside for certain projects. Is that the case? The intel community still has, certain money, or that's the priority of this administration to make sure the intel community is funded?
Well, very different from defense budgets, which are published every year, and you can, get a pretty strong read on what's being spent. Budgets for the intelligence agencies are a lot more hidden, a lot more in the dark. So, yes, I would say that they are a little bit more protected than the DoD's budget, although the DoD's budget is the largest line item in the federal budget, and it's definitely the easiest place to look at for inefficiencies and places to cut. But you're correct. I think the intelligence budgets are far more protected, and quite simply, we don't necessarily know the totality of what's being spent and what it's being spent on.
Right. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, Evan, I want to get into what you guys are doing at clearancejobs.com and kind of find out anything going on with the site, anything going on with your career fairs, the Uncareer Fair. I want to find out more about that as well. We're talking to Evan Lesser. He is director and founder of clearancejobs.com. They are a website for those who have clearances, anything from confidential all the way up to top secret, SCI, full poly, and everything else. If you have a clearance, it's a great place to begin looking for something. You can post your resume on there. You can find jobs that are open. You can do some networking and talk to recruiters and everything else. Great articles and everything else on that site, clearancejobs.com. We'll be right back after this break. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been having a real interesting conversation about what's going on with the clearance job market. There's been a lot of different things happening. The Snowden effect, I call it, with the person who left from NSA and is now in Hong Kong releasing some of our secrets. We've had a sequester. We've had budget issues. We've had a number of different issues with this community, whether it be Department of Defense, Homeland Security, with the intel community, or anything else that requires a clearance to get into the federal government. What's been the impact on that? We've been talking about the impacts of all these things with Evan Lesser. He is director and founder of ClearanceJobs.com, and he's been giving us some insight on what's been going on. Evan, before I go into what's going on at Clearance Jobs, I just had one other question. In terms of hiring, we talked about intelligence hiring still good, robust. Cyber is still robust. IT hiring still robust in the clear job market. What about accounting, administration, you know, finance, HR? Has that kind of softened out? I mean, are people who just have clearances who don't have unique skills, are they still kind of benched for right now? I mean, what are you seeing?
You actually hit the nail on the head. You're correct. A lot of the office positions are the ones that we've seen cut. So budget, contracts, finance, accounting, some of the construction positions, a lot of those type of things are the things that we've seen some pullback on. So IT and engineering are still up there, still right at the top, but administrative positions, others that are either construction or office type of jobs are the ones that we've seen some pullback on.
You know, in terms of what you guys are doing at ClearanceJobs.com, what's going on? What's new? I mean, you know, break it down from everything that's new with the site, but then let's talk about your career fairs as well. What you got going?
Well, you know, one of the things that we've been trying to keep in mind is the fact that standard resumes of old have really changed, and it's kind of interesting in this conversation. You and I were talking before about younger generation, growing up with the internet and social media, and being more open and more transparent, and that's kind of a normal thing. Well, as the workforce, a lot of younger people are coming in, what we found is that the standard, old bullet-by-bullet resume is not giving employers a really strong read on that candidate and how they'd fit into an organization. It's really easy to look at a resume and see where someone worked and see what their skills are and see what degree they got. But a standard resume doesn't really tell an employer the cultural fit of that person in an organization. Is the organization extremely professional and businesslike and strict and conservative, or is it more laid back and open? Are the hours, strict 9 to 5, or are they more open and flexible? Are the people that you're working with going to be your best friends, or are they just going to be coworkers? So, each workplace has a personality itself. So what we're trying to do, and what will be coming out soon enough, is really going beyond a standard flat, static resume, and trying to let cleared people create 3D profiles where employers can really get a better understanding about that person's personality, what drives them, what their motivations are, what their future career goals are. And ultimately, our thought is that we'll help employers make more intelligent hires and find people that will really fit well within their organization, not just from a skill standpoint, but from a personality standpoint as well.
You know, Evan, and let me make sure I'm hearing this correct, because, we have all, and both you and I know, because we've talked about this a lot, but you have some recruiters who will still say, hey, I want the one-page resume. Then you have some recruiters who are, basically saying, hey, listen, I want so much more information on you. Is this unique to the cleared jobs market, where talent recruiters are starting to say, we need to get a better profile on who we're hiring, because the consequences of a bad hire can be very, very severe. Is that where this is coming from?
Well, it's not really just the cleared space, although the clearance job site seems to be the first or one of the first to really take a look at the old standard flat static resumes and try to move it to more of a 3D profile where you get a lot more information on that person. But, you know, this is really an across-the-board kind of thing for recruiters from multiple industries, not just our own. When employers make a bad hire, it does more than just cost them money. It really can have a severe impact on employee morale. It obviously costs the company in terms of time and finances. And, you know, more and more companies are asking their recruiters and HR staff to find people that, you know, just don't fit the job description, but also fit the culture and personality of the workplace itself.
Wow. Is that something that, you know, even organizations are starting to, rethink? Because sometimes it's hard to get a feel of the culture. And maybe is it a matter of are organizations going to start put more information about them out to kind of say, this is our culture. Do you fit, you know, even though you're applying, do you also fit what we stand for, what we believe in, our values and how we operate? Are we going to see both starting to give more information about each other? So it's almost like a relationship match, jobs are always say it's like dating. You're trying to find the right match in terms of somebody. Is that the case?
It's totally the case. And, you know, companies know the impact of a bad hire. Mm-hmm. And they're not just looking for a person for the job. They're looking for the right person for the job. And, you know, that's why, you know, personally, we're trying to go beyond the flat, static, one-dimensional resume and let people create, more open profiles that not only showcase where they've been, which is really what the old resumes do, but also showcase where they're going and get insights into their personality and what type of workplace is preferred by them. And, you know, ultimately, I think it's going to make for better hires and more efficiencies and happier employees.
You know, talk about your career fair. You had this unique kind of career fair concept of kind of maybe kind of taking it from the big lines and everything else to an invited group of job candidates and employers where they can kind of have a relaxed atmosphere of talking and maybe, you know, seeing if there's a match. How did that work out?
Well, it actually worked out really well. And to take a little bit of a step back, I think, again, you know, we're dealing with a younger and younger audience, and they have very different expectations. The information that they get from the web or from friends or from mobile devices is extremely fast. It's extremely condensed down to the smallest bits. They're not reading a ton of text. Things like YouTube, where the average video session is about 20 seconds, it kind of shows what's been going on. The fact that Twitter is so popular now with its short 120-character messages. The fact that the mobile service Vine is letting people create six-second videos and how amazingly quick and popular that's become really shows the impact of the younger generation on content. So that said, when you take a 20-something and you throw them in the traditional job fair where they put on a stuffy suit and they walk into a room with 1,000 other people and they have to stand in line to talk to an employer and hand them this two-dimensional resume, it just doesn't fit with what their expectations are. So the un-career fair that we created and that we had you come out and take a quick look at is that a very different atmosphere. It's more relaxed. There are no lines. There are no booths. There are no suits. There are no resumes being handed out. It's very quick, almost like speed dating in the fact that you shift between people, you know, very quickly. And the whole idea is that we're trying to get introductions made, trying to let people know more about other people, but not do it in such a stuffy, slow, and kind of plodding atmosphere.
You know, and we only got a quick second. Did employers find it to be intriguing and something that they want to continue to work on, or what are you seeing?
Very much so. We were very surprised and impressed by the results in that employers really liked talking to candidates more openly and more directly and more casually. Again, they were able to get better reads on candidates' personalities rather than just looking at a resume and seeing bullet points. It definitely worked out well. From the professional standpoint, we found out that people we're much more apt to come to something like this where it's more casual and laid back, and there's not 1,000 people. You know, there's only, maybe 75 or 100, very small group of folks, and they're not sitting there competing with hundreds upon hundreds of other candidates and standing in lines wasting their time. So from both the employer and the candidate standpoint, they were pretty happy with the way it turned out.
Outstanding. Evan, as usual, thanks for the insight. As always, keep us abreast of what's going on. We'll check in with you in a couple months to find out what's going on with this market. Hopefully, there'll be a little bit more. The dust will have settled with some of these things, and we can kind of see our way in what's going on. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure, Derek. Take care.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.